This is gonna be cool.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Next Lander Watchcast. I was going to try and do this in a Beavis and Butthead voice, but to be honest with you, I don't know if I have the juice for that.
I thought you had it.
Please,
I was halfway there. Please tell me that's going in. Yeah, put it at the end. put it at the end.
Put that at the end, please.
Yeah. Fire. I'm, of course, Alex Navarro, your host. I am joined by my own Beavis and Butthead, Vinny Caravella and Brad Shoemaker.
Hello. Hi.
On some level, the show has informed the way I go ever since.
Oh, boy.
Man, all right. Look, we're here. Yeah. Uh-huh. We're talking as part of our 4 weeks of movies that are based around and in the universes of the television shows.
Mm-hmm.
We are kicking things off with a movie that is part of, I'm going to say the movie is maybe less so the main part of it, but like a franchise, a property, a thing that looms large in my childhood memory, which is to say Beavis and Butthead, and this is their feature debut, the Beavis and Butthead Do America. Brad Shoemaker, Vinny Caravella, Beavis and Butthead, what does it mean to you?
I bet a lot of the same things it means to you.
Yeah, I think
pretty,
so.
Pretty formative. What year did this start? Was that like 93-ish?
So,
two, three, four?
We'll get into some of the other origin stuff as we go along here, but the basic timeline is that the debut short, which is the Frog Baseball short, debuted on Liquid Television in 1992.
Man.
And then the series kicked off in 1993.
Do they hurt frogs in that?
I mean, they hit a frog with a baseball bat.
Okay. It feels like the show maybe got a little less violent after that. like a little more knucklehead, a little less psychopath.
Yeah, I mean, look, Beavis and Butthead are fairly, let's just say, destructive and thoughtless characters. And they always kind of were. But my recollection is that every now and again, they would delve into something that I would go, I maybe wish they hadn't done that. But by and large, it is mostly just a lot of two dumb teenagers falling on their asses over and over and over again.
So for me, Beavis and Butthead, aside from the antics, it's really, and this movie is a weird thing because Beavis and Butthead for me is tied to MTV in a way that I cannot separate. And the movie kind of has nothing to do with MTV. Like
MTV Films produced it.
I mean, yeah, good soundtrack, you know, like there's obviously music tie and stuff there, but they're not sitting goofing on music videos.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like there was almost a like Mystery Science Theater aspect to it, right? Or like this, like the show was a way to see some music videos in addition to whatever interstitial like dumb shit they got up to.
Totally.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, you know, they don't do the music videos like you said in the movie, though there is a fairly robust licensed soundtrack here of bands, some of which are bands that feature heavily on the show. And what they end up with is, you know, I think what kind of the best case scenario for a large screen version of an extremely small screen cartoon, which is to say they do a greatest hits collection of some of the bits and characters from the show while also doing this outsized government, you know, like arms deal plot that is so tangential to anything they care about that it kind of is great.
It's kind of like the classic escalation that you want in your TV show turned movie.
Yeah.
Like you want it to be something bigger than what could have happened in the show, right? Like,
absolutely.
In this case, it's like almost as big as it can be. You know, it's like a world-threatening plot.
There's that A plot, which you're totally right, which is an existential plot for the basically the United States as we know it. But there's also a very high-stakes plot in which they are almost gonna get it on.
Oh, you mean they're gonna score?
Yeah, they're almost. Which is, if I remember my Beavis and Butthead, is pretty integral to their characters.
Yes. The concept of sex is basically the football that Lucy keeps pulling away. Like,
right.
their entire existence is rooted around the fact that they want to score and never will.
And I think this is jumping a bit ahead here, but this movie is really a collection of gags, so I'm not sure how, you know, going through it chronologically is the way to go. But I think my favorite moment is Beavis's breakdown on the bus when he realizes he's probably not going to score.
We're never going to score. We're never going to score.
It's kind of real, you know? It's like kind of like what have I been wasting all these seasons and all this movie and my entire existence? It's just all falling apart.
Yeah. It's, you know, look, there is, I think, the reason I think Beavis and Butthead is good and the reason it has endured is because it is not just about two dumbasses being offensive. Like, they are. Like, they are offensive people. They are sexist. They are crude. They are at times on the show, you know, somewhat homophobic. But by and large, the entire universe of this show, they never really get into serious trouble for the horrible things that they do, but they also never prosper. Like, they are essentially, like, they live in their own little pocket of reality, where whenever they brush up against our reality, it ruins everyone's lives, but they also never get to achieve anything or anything that even resembles happiness.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, this movie is the perfect illustration of that, you know, where it loops right back around to exactly where they were at the beginning by the end, despite the, like, world-threatening events. The other thing I would say is the reason that this works so well and still works is that they are the butt of the joke.
Yes,
like, most of the time, yeah.
You're not in on the joke with them. They are the joke. You know what I mean? Like, they're ridiculous and stupid and pathetic, and, like, that's why it's funny.
Now,
not because you, like, agree with everything they're saying.
No, absolutely not. Though I will ask the question: when you were watching this show as a kid, did you realize, you know, like, understand the satire aspect of it, or were you just kind of pointing and laughing the way they pointed and laughed at the TV? Because I will say, when the show first came out, I was like 11, you know, and when I was watching it, I would love to give myself enough credit to say that I definitely understood all the ways in which this is satire and you were not supposed to like or emulate these characters, but I'm not going to stand here and pretend I was smart enough to know that necessarily right out of the gate.
I don't remember. I was a little older. I don't remember. All I can say is, in watching this movie now, Butthead is an asshole.
Well, yeah.
And Beavis is kind of a sympathetic character, at least in the, I don't remember how he goes throughout the entire series. I do feel
there,
like,
is a real Dom sub quality to their relationship, where it is Beavis is kind of under Butthead's thrall, and you kind of want Beavis to not necessarily break free, but at least understand that, like, to have some agency.
Yeah, and, like, this movie, I think, resonated for me watching it now on a different vibration, let's say, different level than
different plane of existence.
Than I did the first time, because when they meet their alternate selves, let's say, probably implied by the movie, their parents, there's that same relationship, right? And you're like, oh man, Beavis, could Beavis have been somebody without Butthead?
Yeah.
Is Butthead holding Beavis back?
With a better influence.
Yeah.
He doesn't maybe seem like the worst person.
And Butthead is, like, just pure bully, almost sadist in some ways, you know, like, just wants to see pain and suffering, and I don't know, Beavis is a beautiful soul just trapped in there.
Yeah, there's, and so there is one episode where they, I mean, there's a few different episodes that kind of follow that theme, but there's one that very explicitly does, which is the their Christmas episode where they do an It's a Wonderful Life parody. But, like, the angel wants them to kill themselves because they are just making everyone miserable.
Uh-huh.
And so that Butthead shows him what life would have been like if Butthead had never been born, and everybody's doing great. And Beavis is hanging out with their good friend Stuart, and do, like, helping the homeless on Christmas Eve. Like, and it's just Butthead will not fucking stand for this.
Yeah, so that's so kind of where I was and where I'm at now. That's what I came away from watching this movie with, was, I think when I was a kid, I just thought they were two, you know, of the same mold.
Yeah.
Like, they're both doing these things. You know, what I remember is Cornholio. I remember the laughing. Mm-hmm. I did not remember, and I watched this with my kids for a little bit until they had to go to bed, just how drawn out some of Butthead's dialogue can be, with the giggling, breathing, and laughing. I just don't know if I have the patience for it anymore. It took, and my kids were like, what is going on? Why is he breathed so much?
I think what drove that home for me the most was like the rank illiteracy on display. Like I had completely forgotten that he basically can't read.
Oh,
and
right,
he still
yeah.
reads better than Beavis.
Even their own names.
Yep. And they're in high school. Like these are 15-year-old kids.
Yes. So I don't know. When I was a kid, I enjoyed the show. But I was kind of there for them to bust on MTV videos because that was funny.
Yeah.
And they would just sit there and goof and take the piss out of an MTV video.
Yeah.
You know, or like 30 seconds of it.
If you've never had the chance to go back and watch the series, and unfortunately it is weirdly difficult to watch those episodes intact for a variety of reasons. Yes, a bit like I would say at least a third to a half of the appeal of the show was that they would air a lot of music videos, some of which were somewhat prominent, a lot of which were the kind of stuff you would find floating around the bottom end of 120 minutes or Headbangers Ball or something. And they would just riff over it. And in the early days, they were barely telling jokes. Like, there were barely bits at all. It was mostly them just kind of saying stuff.
Sing it, Beavis. Dirty deeds are cool. Hey, Beavis, have you ever done a dirty deed?
Yeah. I spiked my monkey one time.
These guys always wear the same clothes. That's cool. Hey, we always wear the same clothes. I've had this shirt on for 6 months.
I've had this on for 7 months.
And then by the time season two kind of rolled around, they had kind of embraced the full Mystery Science Theater aspect of it and kind of started doing more extended bits around it.
Oh.
Hey, but is it normal for the inside of your bunghole to itch?
Whoa, is this video over?
Yeah. Yeah, it's over.
Well, that was pretty cool. I mean, it sucked, but at least it was short. They should make them all this short.
Yeah, really? Then you wouldn't have to listen to them as much. What else is on?
And that really was, like, a huge part of the appeal was these two 15-year-olds basically doing what every other 15-year-old was doing at that time, which was sitting in front of the TV, watching music videos, and rambling about them.
Yes, and I don't remember enough of the narrative parts, but did the music video stuff inform what would happen with the narrative? Did they see something in a music video and then be like, we should go, you know, destroy a car or anything?
Very
like that?
Rarely. They would usually pick videos that would kind of fit the theme of the episode. Like if there was some specific bit of misadventure they were about to go on, they would find some song or some band that made sense. But also there was a lot of times where they would just pick bands that were fun to either dunk on or to have them be super excited about. Like every time the Butthole Surfers came on, they were fucking stoked. Every time, you know, some bargain basement 80s glam metal band would come on there, they would just fucking dunk on them windmill style.
And it's Mike Judge doing both, almost all the voices.
Almost all the male voices on the show are done by Mike Judge.
So he's just kind of talking to himself, riffing on with himself. Okay.
He's gotten pretty good at it over the years.
I guess so.
Does he just do their voices unmodified? Have you ever seen him do the voices? I know like the South Park guys, there's a bunch of like pitch modulation, whatever stuff going on. But like, does he just spit those voices out of his voice box?
I've seen some footage of him doing the voice, not recently, but back in the day, my understanding was that by and large, he was doing a lot of the voices without a whole lot of additional vocal work. And you can kind of hear, so like, look, Beavis and Butthead had a long run over the 90s. It had two different reboots. There was a 2011 single season reboot where they moved away from the music videos aspect of it because they were barely showing videos on MTV at that time and replaced it. I mean, there were some music videos, but there was also a whole bunch of MTV reality show programming they were riffing on. So it was like Jersey Shore and Teen Mom and all that fucking bullshit. And then they did another reboot back like 2 years ago. A full season of the show, and also another standalone movie, Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe. And you can kind of hear it in his voice that he is older.
Uh-huh.
But it's still the voices. Like, other than the fact that it is clearly a guy who is 20 years removed from when he was first doing these voices, it does not sound that different.
I had no idea there was a second movie. What?
Yes, it was direct to Paramount Plus, I believe.
Oh my! Or wait, did I know that? I might have known.
We may have talked about that at some point. But yeah, they Do the Universe is not quite as good as I would say as Do America, but it is still very funny. But the new season, I would say both the reboot seasons are fucking great. Like both of them at least have a few episodes that I would count as some of the best in the series.
Was it? It was, if I remember correctly, and I probably don't.
Mm-hmm.
This was probably causing politicians and congresspeople to be upset, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
This is right in that window
of
just like the youth are going to shit, you know, like right there with Mortal Kombat and Night Trap and what else was bad at that time?
Everything.
92 to 94 era.
Yeah.
Like
a lot of Parents Dragons, Television maybe. Council and that kind of shit, like coming up and trying to, you know, say that these are the ills of society are being, you know, rooted in all of this. And so, yeah, Beavis and Butthead had its controversies and definitely a couple of cases of like senators pointing at it and saying, look at this. This is what's destroying our youth's brains.
The Beavis and Butthead segment where they are setting things on fire. They show features of two teenagers who comment on rock video and spend time burning and destroying things. And the Austin Messenger watched one show that had the cartoon characters saying, fire is fun.
And not all the high fructose corn syrup we keep serving them. But so there were two different incidents. The big one was a kid burned down his trailer home. And the parents, I think, or someone tried to blame the show for it because Beavis used to love to yell fire then set fires. And that is a recurring bit with this character. But apparently the family had no cable television. So there's no actual evidence that the kid ever saw Beavis and Butthead. It just happened to come out around this time. But because it was such a firestorm, quote unquote, MTV freaked out and then went and re-edited a bunch of the episodes to get rid of some of the instances of them, you know, setting fires, talking about fire, to the point where they edited the master tapes. And there is a distinct possibility that there are no masters that exist with the original content of those episodes.
Well, that
stinks. Oh my gosh.
Didn't they also add a warning at the beginning? Like it was kind of in character somewhere, in universe almost?
Yeah, there's a bunch of episodes that have that message that basically is like, these kids are dumbasses, don't do what they do kind of stuff. And so there was another one later on, some 13-year-old kid like dropped a bowling ball or something off an overpass, and they do something similar on the show, but it was another case where it's like, the family doesn't have cable, there's no evidence this kid actually saw this on Beavis and Butthead.
Look, kids are idiots.
Yes, I was an idiot, and I watched the show, and I set no fires, let me tell
you. And I think throughout our entire generation in this recording, and probably for a lot of the people listening, cartoons are for kids, which I don't agree with, and B, the cartoons are too violent has been a thing probably our entire lives.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's the whole itchy and scratchy parody or satire that, and you know, it's not possible. It's impossible to look back at those Bugs Bunny cartoons and be like, well, those were good. That's good violence.
Yeah, no. I mean, every time he takes it to Elmer Fudd, like, he is doing the world a service.
Literally shooting him in the face with a gun.
Look, this kind of censorship has existed in all, especially nascent media forms. You know, the Comics Code existed, like, all kinds of shit. And they're all, like, politicians are always looking for easy scapegoats for, you know, why the youth of America is being destroyed one way or the other.
Gotta protect the children.
I am not a person that believes that media has no influence on anyone ever. I don't think that's true. But I also think the way that this stuff tends to get blamed is in the laziest, easiest way possible.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll say, as a parent, you're like, look, you probably try and, to the best of your ability, be aware of what your kids are ingesting.
Yeah.
And if that means having to watch an episode of Beavis and Butthead, that's on you. And if you cancel cable, then they're watching it over their friend's house. Have a conversation. You should talk to your kids about Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah.
When I asked my wife to watch this with me last night, I have never seen a face for a movie for the watch cast like the one she made and said, no way.
I was not a fan. All right.
I think Beavis and Butthead is definitely an acquired taste.
Yes.
Like, it is not for everyone.
It absolutely helps to have been between the ages of 11 and 15 when this show was on the air.
MTV, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, again, the reason I think Beavis and Butthead has endured and continues to be good, I mean, it's two things. One, Mike Judge is a fairly funny guy and has not really modulated his sense of humor that much in the ensuing years outside of understanding where the cultural trends are going. And two, this is just slapstick. Like, this is not that different in a lot of ways from something like Looney Tunes. It was just the 90s dirtbag version of Looney Tunes.
But I think this movie does try to go and have a voice on some things, or at least I'm taking out of that. Maybe I'm projecting into the world of Beavis and Butthead some things like, you know, the kind of terror state that
the American security state.
Yeah, yeah. That is in this, presented in this movie, and being like, yeah, you know, maybe that's not too far off.
Truly a cautionary tale ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of things you can point to in this movie and just say, well, that's funny. I don't necessarily think the satire in it is, like, that pointed or that sharp, but I do think it is just generally, it has a really good pace to it, and the jokes are funny, and it lands pretty much everything that it wants to do, which is really all I could ask of a movie like this.
Yeah, I was kind of blown away at how much it holds up and how entertained I was.
Yeah, still. It definitely moves, which I appreciated.
Also remarkably short. It's like an hour or 20 minutes with credits.
Yeah. Mm. Couple of questions here from you guys. Just, you know, some general, you know, experience with this show. Were you big Liquid Television watchers when it was on?
I liked it, but I never sought it out, I guess I would say. Like, I saw it at friends' houses when we were up late, because it was always on, like, 11 o'clock or something, right?
They would start airing reruns, I think, during the day later on, after they kind of stopped making new ones. But, yeah, I remember Liquid Television at least being an after 8 o'clock thing.
Okay. Liquid Television is basically, like, the Eon Flux show to me. Like, that's all I remember from that show was that. I had completely forgotten that Beavis and Butthead even came out of that thing.
There was a lot of, like, it was Aeon Flux. There were a bunch of, like, Bill Plimpton shorts and stuff in there. And just a lot of, like, weird one-offs of animation. And I will just say, this was probably my inroad to the idea of animation outside of the cartoons you would watch on Saturday morning or on Nickelodeon or whatever. Like, that was probably my real introduction to the idea of weird adult animation.
Sure. Even like, the... like Toonami stuff that's a little bit later, and
much
also,
later, like at least several years,
and that's and that wasn't even like aimed at adults. I'm kind of with you. Like, I think that Aeon Flux was a fly in the eyelashes, right? That's
the Peter Chung, like, cartoon. Yeah,
that's the one I remember. I remember the Liquid Television logo. Mm-hmm. I can't necessarily tell you what was in an episode or not. You know?
Yeah. I mean, part of the problem is, like a lot of other MTV stuff, it is very hard to find Liquid Television nowadays. Like, I think the best you can find is a pirated VHS rip that is, like, seven generations of taped over. Like, it looks fucking terrible. So Beavis and Butthead did come out on DVD in limited form. It has never gotten a full series release. A bunch of episodes have never been officially released on home media anywhere. And some of that is because of the music video rights, obviously, but other stuff is because of, you know, some of the things that we talked about, where some of the episodes may have been edited to such a degree that the master tapes just don't exist for the originals anymore.
Man, that's such a shame.
Wild. Yeah. So is there some Beavis and Butthead project where people are taking the best versions?
Yes, there is.
Okay, of course there is.
If you are willing to sail the high seas, there is a thing out there called the King Turd Collection.
Of course.
Where someone has gone in and taken what the best possible sources for everything, including the music videos, some of which re-aired, you know, on like VH1 and other stuff. So there is, like, you know, if you want to see their riff over the Michael Jackson Black and White video, here's this horrible VHS rip of this specific part of this episode. And so what they did was stitch everything together using the best available sources and the original, all the videos that were supposed to be in there where they were placed. And so it is a Frankenstein. Great. But it is pretty close.
Like, sometimes the internet proves its worth as a conduit for culture. Like, that's just straight up like the Star Wars 4K 77,
yep,
thing.
Yeah.
The King Turd Collection.
So there's also a Daria collection that was done that restores all the music from that. Daria obviously was a Beavis and Butthead character, got a pretty popular spinoff show that I'm going to say was probably a little sharper and smarter than Beavis and Butthead generally tended to be. And there's also one for Jackass, I think.
Was there a clear divide between the Beavis and Butthead fans and the Daria fans at your high school, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, look,
plenty of overlap.
Plenty of overlap. I think Daria was like it. Mike Judge didn't do Daria, is the thing. Like, it's a different showrunner, and it's a different tone. And it really is just more of like a cartoon, straight up sitcom than it is like the Beavis and Butthead Looney Tunes shit. But also, I think that show's really good on its own merits. It just doesn't do what Beavis and Butthead was doing.
Sure, this is like more of the show for like art school smart kids.
Yeah.
Versus like the types of dipshits that went for Beavis and Butthead.
Sardonic goths and Gen X kids,
yes,
you know?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm going to ask you a few questions here.
Okay.
On a scale of 1 to 10, what was your general Beavis and Butthead fandom? Like, say, 1, you would catch an episode every once in a while. 10, you are literally watching every episode as it airs on MTV.
Like an 8, maybe? 7, okay. 8? Like, I was watching it avidly, for sure, and so were my friends.
I was probably more like a 3 or 4.
Okay.
Like I think I caught them when they were on, but I don't know if I was tuning in for appointment viewing,
yeah.
If I remember correctly.
I was probably a 9 or a 10, and I will say that it was to the point where when they shifted in season 7 to shorter episodes with fewer music videos, I got really mad. it was a little bit obsessive for me. What to you would you consider to be the fundamental Beavis and Butthead bands? And don't say AC/DC and Metallica.
Yeah.
Like from the music videos?
Yeah, just stuff that they reference a lot, they talk about, that is bands that you associate with that show.
The ones that are hallowed?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why Iron Maiden?
Yeah.
Springs to mind, or Black Sabbath.
Who sings Breaking the Law?
Judas Priest.
There you go. Judas Priest.
Okay. I would put those on there. I would say Gwar is very
okay, yes.
Fundamentally.
Definitely.
As someone who has seen Gwar live like 5 times in his life, it had some influence on me, let me tell you. Also, Gwar is in that Genesis game, the Beavis and Butthead game. The whole point of that game is going to a Gwar concert, which is fucking great. I would put Butthole Surfers pretty high on that list. Mm. Primus is one that I kind of associate with them. There's a bunch of Primus videos on the show, and also they're on one of the 2 Beavis and Butthead albums, because there are 2 of them somehow.
is that where the Beavis and Butthead Experience came from?
Yes.
Okay.
So that predates the movie and the movie soundtrack. That is a project of David Geffen, who was apparently a big Beavis and Butthead fan, which is why Geffen Films and Productions is also pretty heavily involved in this movie. But yes, the Beavis and Butthead Experience is a multi-band, multi-song compilation with long Beavis and Butthead sketches in front of a bunch of the tracks.
Okay, that's what I have. I have that on CD. I thought I had the soundtrack for this movie, but I completely forgot that the Experience is the one that I bought.
Yeah, that's the
I guess
they hang out with Anthrax and stuff.
Yes.
Dude, what's up with your hair?
You got a problem with my hair?
How come there's no hair on the sides?
I thought it looked kind of cool.
I think you look like a dick.
Yeah. You look like a dick.
There you go.
Shut up, Beavis. Don't make me kick your ass again.
Yes, there's like Cher is on there, right?
Yes. They do a duet with I Got You Babe.
Yes.
That's true. You got me, but hell, I got you.
Maybe that gives you an indication of my level of Beavis and Butthead fandom. I bought the Beavis and Butthead Experience.
Yeah, I had it too. And I had this soundtrack from the movie as well. They were good compilations of music. For a thing that is attached to a property this dumb, they actually got some good bands and some good songs for it.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, again, like, I feel like the characters are dumb. Like, the property maybe is not.
Yeah.
Like, the property is, like, fairly sharp.
I think people behind it are pretty smart. They are just making very dumb comedy.
Yes. Yeah. It's like highbrow, lowbrow or something.
All right. Last question before we kind of get into the production stuff. What is the most Beavis and Butthead thing you and your friends did when you were kids?
I think I've talked about this before. My neighbor and I, mostly my neighbor,
mm-hmm.
Like, I genuinely would not have, excuse me, like, gotten into this stuff as nearly as much or at all if it weren't for him, but, like, way into fireworks-related hijinks and other similar, like, projects involving household cleaners that were explosive-type stuff.
Yep.
Had a thing for, like, taking bottle rockets and breaking the stems off and then lighting them and then throwing them in the air just to see which way they would go.
Yep. And then inevitably having to run as soon as they started coming toward you.
Using this big giant slingshot thing he had to, like, shoot rocks at passing cars.
So wait, is the question inspired by, or you? This could be in a Beavis and Butthead
show? It could
show.
Be. It is the most dumbass teen boy Beavis and Butthead-like thing that you and your friends used to do.
Yeah, the last thing I'll say before we move on, like, in my defense, there was enough open space around here.
Well, also, you lived in a state where you could get the good stuff, right?
No, we had to go to South Carolina for the good stuff.
You at least were there was a state line you could cross to get it.
Yes,
okay.
We literally had to cross the state line to get the good stuff, but we weren't setting off like Drano bombs in people's backyards or something.
Right.
Like there's a giant open field and a bunch of woods like right in front of where we grew up. So
yeah. Vinny, what do you got?
Oh, the list is very, very long. We were not good kids.
Just give me the most, like the most top line first thing you think of.
Let's see. We definitely did the like dog poop ring and run stuff on the thing. Like Beavis and Butthead were not smart about what they did, so I'm trying to think of something that was so dumb that we did that was like you got
dumb
caught.
And destructive.
They would egg a house, right? Didn't they? That's probably their level of sophistication.
They'd probably egg their own house, right?
Like, yeah, they'd egg the wrong house.
So in that spirit, the dumbest thing that we did, we used to steal hood ornaments from cars.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. And the one that we were trying to kick off from a car once, it was like one of the fancy ones, like a bolted-on Jaguar or something like that. And it was parked in the person's driveway, and the person was in the car.
Nice.
And
lying down?
I think was either in the car or was in the house and like was right there just watching us do it. And so we all bolted, and the person who is trying to hit it off with a baseball bat or kick it off totally got busted.
Nice.
And we all split, and you know, it was just don't call my parents. don't call my parents. So yeah. That's probably the most Beavis and Butthead version of that.
Yeah.
I'll say
that one counts definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. The other stuff we did, I'm just gonna say was rad as hell and very cool.
And very smart.
Yeah, very smart.
I had a best friend named Eric, and we would do the voices a lot to the point where my poor mother really got tired of it after a certain point. And he was definitely the one I would get up to the most, you know, chicanery with. A lot of it was stuff like, you know, hitting mailboxes with baseball bats and, you know, building the occasional Piccolo Pete bomb to just blow up in an open field somewhere. Not to actually do serious damage, just to go out in an empty space and just blow up, but see an explosion, go, awesome. the most Beavis and Butthead, like, fail thing we did, we were both skaters, and we used to skate around this parking garage a lot. And we were going down from the top of the parking garage, which was like three stories, and we were about to round a corner because it's like a big loop thing you do, kind of around to the ground level. And so he was rounding the corner from the third floor to the second floor, and then waiting for him, coming up very slowly, was a cop car that he eventually like straight up did a roll over the hood on.
Wow! They like made it. They like did it.
I mean,
oh, like rolled his body over
his
the hood.
Body rolled over the
oh,
hood
did,
of this
did,
cop
didn't
car.
Like ollie up on. Okay.
No. And let me be clear. Skateboarding was illegal in my town. You could not skate around the streets or on the sidewalks. And so we both got ticketed because he rolled over the cop car, but because we were skateboarding when we weren't supposed to be.
What is that ticket? What is it? Like
it was like $50.
Oh, was it? Man.
It was $50. And you had like if you got a bunch of them, you had to go to court.
That's like some Footloose ass shit, man.
Yeah,
that's like
they
no
eventually
dancing.
Got rid of that law.
Okay,
and then they built a skate park.
Wow, the laws do change, huh?
Yeah,
I'll add the one that's probably the most Beavis and Butthead episode where they would survive, but a real human would die. Was we thought we could build a flamethrower by filling up a super soaker with gasoline.
You're right. That is the most Beavis and Butthead thing imaginable.
And then squirting it and lighting the stream that came out, not thinking that if the fire ever hit that full thing of gasoline, it would probably explode and blow us all up.
I mean, you're still here and you have your eyebrows, so I assume it didn't go as bad as it could have.
It did start lighting the ground on fire as gasoline would, and then we had to jump in it, and then the gasoline didn't go out. But I'm very glad that nobody got exploded or killed. That was a very dumb thing to do.
We here at the Nextlander podcast...
Plastic melts, by the way.
Yeah.
Let you know that.
We insist that nobody try the stupid-ass shit we tried as kids at home.
No, we are praying and hoping that you are smarter and the generations that came after us are smarter. Look, we were the last ones. We're processing all the lead in the soil for you from years of leaded gasoline.
Yep.
So hopefully you don't have to.
We are basically beings of pure lead.
Don't worry. No kids will ever listen to the show.
Yeah, I hope not. So let's talk about the movie and kind of how we got here. Beavis and Butthead, as we mentioned, is the creation of Mike Judge. Mike Judge is a Bachelor of Science in Physics.
What? No.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. And he, in fact, worked several jobs in physics and mechanical engineering before getting extremely bored with it.
I feel like that is both the most and least surprising thing you could have said about Mike Judge, actually.
Well, then he became a bass player in a touring blues band.
Okay. All right.
Tracks.
How did he become an animator? He saw some animation cells on display at a movie theater once and thought that seemed neat. So then he bought himself a camera and took it up as a hobby.
Uh-huh.
I think Mike Judge might actually be a fairly smart guy.
Oh, yeah.
Who just likes really dumb shit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the breadth of his work probably speaks to that.
So the first, as we mentioned, the first short aired on Liquid Television in 1992. MTV got all the way on board. It was, I think, one of the more popular Liquid Television bits. They also eventually ordered a full Aeon Flux series, though I don't think that lasted super long. And it started in 1993. There were 7 seasons, as we said, the 2 reboot seasons, so there's technically 9 seasons of the show. And the budget for it was microscopic to start. If you ever go back and watch like the first season episodes, which there's only like 4 or 5 of them, the animation on them is pretty garbage, and Mike Judge agrees with that. He thought the animation on those early episodes was horrendous. Straight up said he did not know why anyone liked it. Co-writer here, Joe Stillman, was a writer on the show. He was also a writer on The Adventures of Pete and Pete. And eventually would go on to be a co-writer on a bunch of King of the Hill stuff, and also co-wrote the first 2 Shrek movies.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Dude probably did pretty well then.
I think so, yeah. His catalog kind of drops off after the Shrek stuff, so I assume those residuals are doing just fine for him.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And the uncredited, technically, co-director here is Yvette Kaplan, who is a series regular. She got her start as an animator on things like The Magic School Bus and Doug.
Okay. Hell yeah.
All right.
And as she mentions on the commentary, which she does with Mike Judge for this, I started out working with good boys, and then I moved to the bad boys.
How come uncredited on the movie?
I don't know. I'm not really. Okay. I mean, it's possible that she didn't fully co-direct, so it might be a thing where she just did some of the direction work, but did not get full director credit. But Mike Judge basically says, this is the woman who made this movie with me.
Oh, okay. Nothing like horrible or horrendous, hopefully.
And if anything, they both seem pretty effervescent about the whole thing. So, So, fun, just a quick thing here. I mean, MTV, like, you know, they were very on board with the idea of doing more as much Beavis and Butthead as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. They love to capitalize on this stuff. The original idea for doing a movie, though, was not in-house because they did not have an in-house movie studio yet at Viacom. They had not bought Paramount yet. So... Warner Brothers was in talks at one time to do a movie, and they wanted to do it as live action.
Wow.
Just where Warner Brothers is now just sounds like the most Warner Brothers thing, you know, just in a series of bad ideas. No love for Warner Brothers at this point, really.
I mean, this was before Warner Brothers was making really bad decisions, but that went nowhere. Mike Judge did not want to do a live-action movie, though that idea did come up again in the ensuing years between Do America and Do the Universe. But it was always just like, yeah, you know, I thought about it. Maybe there's a way to do it, but then it never went anywhere.
That's one of the worst ideas I've ever heard.
It's pretty bad. So they bought Paramount eventually, and that is when they became the studio partner. Mike Judge says this was the first MTV Films movie. I have not had a chance to go back and verify whether that is actually true. I thought Joe's Apartment was for some reason, but that might have actually been right after this. Do you remember Joe's apartment?
I do remember Joe's apartment with the cockroaches.
Yeah, the talking cockroaches. Jerry O'Connell. Yeah.
Yeah.
That movie's not very good, but it was of a time. But Mike Judge says this is the first MTV Films production. This is the first time you see the spaceman in front of a movie.
I think Mike Judge is wrong about that.
Okay.
It's by 6 months ish.
Okay.
Maybe it went into production first.
Maybe. Because animation.
Joe's apartment came out in July 96 to December 96 for this.
Okay. I'm going to say right now, Mike Judge not remembering Joe's apartment is not that big of a crime. It's okay, Mike. And this movie did extraordinarily well. It was, for its time, the biggest December opening weekend ever, and then it lost that record the next year to Scream 2.
Oh. All right.
But it still made a ton. It was $12 million budget. It made 65 worldwide, which was more than enough to be a rousing success for what they put into it. But then they didn't make another movie or really do, like, once Beavis and Butthead ended its official run at the end of season 7, they didn't do anything with it for, like, 12-ish years, maybe slightly more.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably for the best. This movie kind of does everything I would want out of a movie.
Yeah.
Based on this property, and, like, what are you going to do for the next one? Also, Judge seems like a guy who likes to move on to new things.
Totally, because King of the Hill was not too long after this movie came out.
Also, I want to say, and I could be way off on this, this is just going off of kid memory me, when big animated movies came out that were based off of other properties, like the Simpsons movie, was there another Simpsons movie ever?
No.
Theatrical?
No.
And I'm sure that thing did fine, right?
It did very well, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it did gangbusters, because it didn't review super great, I don't think. It did fine, but yeah, I mean, enough people went to see the Simpsons movie that you could see them greenlighting another one.
Yeah, so I feel like movies based off of animated series of the time didn't necessarily do the same thing that animated franchises do now, where there's like 7 of them.
No. Briefly talking about our cast here, I mean, obviously, we said Mike Judge does a lot of the voices here, and apparently at one point early in the process, he was in a meeting with a casting director who kept trying to pitch celebrities for voices of Beavis and Butthead, and he kept saying, no, I do that voice. And the casting director was, like, not getting it and just thinking he was being difficult. It's like, no, I do all these voices.
Yeah.
But we do get some celebrity cameos in this. Most notably, Demi Moore and Bruce Willis as Muddy and Dallas, the two arms dealers that they run afoul of.
Damn! I am going to kill him!
No, honey. We're going to kill him.
I super did not clock that until the credits rolled.
Yeah.
Same here. Are they a thing at this point?
Yeah, were they still together then? I can't remember.
So, Mike Judge says they were married still at this time, but they were not. I mean, so she was off filming something in Europe around the time they were getting all this together. So what ended up happening was they went to Idaho, which was where Bruce Willis had one of his houses. They recorded him doing his lines in what he describes as the laundry closet of Bruce Willis's house. And then went to Europe to go get Demi Moore's audio, but Bruce Willis happened to be there at the time. And he did not realize that Demi Moore was also in the movie. They did not know each other was in the movie at the time because they had not told each other.
Nice.
The other ones are much smaller. And in fact, one of them is I think technically was originally uncredited, though they added it to the credits later. Greg Kinnear plays one of the ATF agents.
Huh.
The one that isn't Robert Stack.
Chief, you know that guy whose camper they were whacking off in?
Mork, you are a federal agent. You represent the United States government. Never end a sentence with a preposition.
Oh, you know that guy in whose camper they... I mean, that guy off in whose camper they were whacking.
That's better. Yes?
The one who ends with a preposition all the time?
Yes, that one.
Okay.
Greg Kinnear, I think, had done Talk Soup, but this is like kind of before his movie career sort of took off. I think he just
did
liked
Greg
the show.
Kinnear's movie career take off?
Ever a little bit there. He wasn't as good as it gets. He was in a few things that were pretty big.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I have nothing against Greg Kinnear.
No, he's fine.
Yeah.
I mentioned Robert Stack here. You know, Robert Stack, an actor of some gravity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
National security is a responsibility of every American. Bork.
Cavity search.
Deep and hard.
The only reason this dumbass body cavity search joke that is running through this entire movie works is because Robert Stack is giving it the gravity that it doesn't deserve.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, you know, it really proves the rule of like something that's maybe not that funny can become funny if you just beat it into the ground.
Mm.
I think the final joke it payoff is pretty good, where Butthead finally gets his cavity search and is just like, "Did I score?"
Yeah,
that's
also
yeah.
A lot of great animation in this, like his disheveled look after the search is also incredible. But there's a lot of, we'll talk about it.
Yeah,
a lot of good animation in this.
Cloris Leachman, mm-hmm. the legend of 60s and 70s comedy, is the old lady on the bus that they keep talking to, who they keep calling a slut.
Uh-huh.
Well, I hope to score big there myself. I'm mostly going to be doing the sluts.
Yeah, I'm hoping to do some sluts, too. Yeah, do they have a lot of sluts in Las Vegas?
Oh, there's so many sluts who won't know where to begin.
Whoa. Hey, buddy, this chick is pretty cool. She says there's going to be tons of sluts in Las Vegas.
Cool. It's so nice to meet young men who are so well-mannered.
And then there's a few other, like, random ones here, just, like, one-scene tours. Like, fucking Eric Bogosian is the tour guide when they're at Old Faithful.
The geyser shoots out over 12,000 gallons of water in a single eruption.
That's not that much, really.
Yeah, really. Let's get out of here.
Richard Linklater, the director, is the tour bus driver who beats them up, or beats up Beavis at one point.
We're never gonna score! All right,
that's it, Nun-Nuts!
What's more of a punk? Kick your ass!
I saw the name and I was like, wait, that's not the Linklater that makes movies, is it?
This is like not that long after Dazed and Confused. Like, this is Richard Linklater.
Weird.
And then the last one, David Letterman plays the Motley Crue roadie who talks to them, the one who is like the butthead, older butthead. That
wait,
is David
what?
Letterman.
Shut up, dumbass. You didn't score. I scored with both of them.
What? Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
not have guessed it.
The part of a lifetime.
I'm pretty sure the only movie roles he had in the 90s were this and Cabin Boy.
Want to buy a monkey?
Yeah.
A lot of people doing some acting in this.
Yep. All right, well, we should talk about what actually happens in the movie. I don't think we're going to go plot by plot point by plot point here. We'll talk about the broad strokes. But first, we need to take a quick break. So we will be right back. And we are back. And as we mentioned, this movie is, for all intents and purposes, a outsized greatest hits collection of Beavis and Butthead bits and characters and things. There are a few things that don't really appear, like Stewart is not in this. They don't really go to Burger World at any point, but by and large, everything else that you would expect is there, plus a bunch of celebrity cameos and international intrigue. But things start off exactly the way they should for Beavis and Butthead, with them really, really wanting to watch TV.
Yeah.
And they can't because their TV got stolen.
Yeah. I think this movie, like, it's an interesting question or exercise. How do you turn a TV show into a movie, right? Like, mm-hmm. we could probably do, like, 3 months of movies like this and, like, study that question. We're not going to do that. But this movie, like, amazingly captures the essence of an episode and, like, includes a lot of the elements of that without just feeling like another episode, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, it goes big in a lot of ways that, like, this is, I guess, this is not a fully formed thought, but this is like exactly what I want out of especially an animated show moving to the big screen.
Yeah.
Like I said, like the plot itself is grandiose, but also there's a bunch of sequences you would just never see on television animation, right?
Like this intro where, like, they're doing like the big, you know, King Kong
yes.
bit as kind of the dream sequence. Like, that is not a thing MTV would have ever budgeted them
right.
to do.
That is exactly it. Like, it is, they do the best thing you can do with something like this, which is to say, hey, look, we have budget and look what we've done with it. Like, here's some shit you've never seen before in the show that is really going to stick with you and, like, is really impressive in its own right.
Yeah.
And, like, it's that low crotch shot of Butthead at the beginning. It's
yep.
like where King Kong Butthead steps over the camera. And, like, you get a lot of angles on characters you wouldn't normally get, you know, because it's mm-hmm. expensive to animate. Like that, and like the Beavis roaring fire stuff. Like, it's just such a great over the top way to start this thing.
Totally. And, you know, the thing with, like you said, there's a lot of stuff in here that is just not angles of these characters you ever get. Like, they're with that limited budget, there are very specific, there is, you know, essentially a brand Bible for Beavis and Butthead that's like, here's how you can shoot these characters. Here's what these backgrounds are going to look like, because we're not going to make more of them So their house is always seen from this angle. Mm. They're always sitting in front of the couch from this angle until much later in the show when they get slightly more budget, that kind of thing. Here, they're just, they can do kind of whatever they want within what is a limited movie budget, but must have seemed like a gargantuan amount of money for what they had previously had to work with.
And so they also linger on stuff for longer than, you know, they could. Like this mm-hmm. opening scene of them realizing the TV's gone goes on for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's,
and it's funnier because of it.
Yeah, that's absolutely like the case in point. One of those things where you like you just keep going until it becomes very funny.
Yeah.
Hey, Butthead! Oh no, Butthead! Butthead, wake up! Butthead!
Damn it, Beavis! I was about to score.
Yeah, but check it out. It's gone.
What?
The TV!
Oh, yeah. Well, where is it?
I don't know. I just woke up, and it was gone. And look, the window's broken, too.
$100 for this baby.
Oops.
No. Oh, no.
Whoa. I think I just figured something out, Beavis.
What?
This sucks.
Yeah, it really sucks.
It's funny, not funny, and then funny again.
That's, yes, exactly.
Do you think they had to license the Metallica and AC/DC shirts for, like...
I don't know.
I forget what they ended up to, because I think technically they're not using the exact logo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're definitely not, so...
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think that is maybe what they let them kind of navigate around that. But, you know, AC/DC is on the soundtrack, and as Mike Judge points out, the song they used, the riff from it, is actually the theme to Beavis and Butthead Backward.
Oh.
He just stole that riff, basically, and then reversed it.
Huh.
Really?
Yes.
He admitted that?
He admitted that, yes.
Okay, fair, okay.
But we don't get the original TV theme in this, because when they get to the credits, it is this 70s cop show parody with Isaac Hayes literally singing the theme.
If you cross Beavis and Butthead, they will throw down and blow your ass away. Know what I'm saying?
Beavis and Butthead.
So great. I almost brought up Isaac Hayes when you were talking about like celebrity appearances in this, in the cast, because that it kind of is, but also like they just seem like they're having a lot of fun with this movie, you know? Like this is an incredibly like long, elaborate sequence for the credits that absolutely did not need to be in here, but is incredible.
As with all animated productions, you can assume that there were a lot of stresses that we just don't know about, and they talk about this being a fairly ad hoc production. They definitely bebop their ways around some things where they could. But they also really, I think, kind of reveled in the ability to just kind of do whatever.
Mm.
And then once they're on the hunt for their television, we get our only real major check-ins here at Highland High School featuring Mr. Van Driessen and their principal, their poor fucking principal. I mean, he's an asshole, but also that man could not be more mentally frayed from just dealing with these two kids.
Yeah, I had forgotten a lot. I mean, obviously, Daria's in here. I'd forgotten.
Very briefly.
Yeah, very briefly.
Oh, is she in the movie?
I don't think any.
She has one scene, and she's in the singing circle with Mr. Van Driessen later.
Okay.
But I didn't remember much of the high school stuff from the show.
Principal McVicker? Coach Buzzcut?
Nope. I hadn't remembered enough of it.
They tried to steal the AV TV and, of course, destroy it. Right in front of Mr. Principal McVicker,
I mean, it's you're absolutely right that they never win,
Yeah.
But they kind of never lose either, you know? Like, they also just have an amazing ability to drift through trouble.
Yeah.
You know, like, they destroy this TV basically in front of the principal and then just walk off. And that's this entire movie, right? Is them just kind of walking right out of instance after instance of stuff that should have taken them down.
Yeah. I mean, they've been expelled from school. They've always had, you know, and then somehow fate comes back in and it's just like, actually, no, the president says these kids are cool, so they get to be in school now kind of stuff. Like, they do prosper occasionally, but they never realize it and they never appreciate it, so it isn't really prospering. They just get to reset, basically. And eventually they find their way to this seedy motel because they see that they have TV there, and that brings us into contact with Muddy, the Bruce Willis character, who has a job for them, or thinks he has a job for them because he's so drunk he doesn't realize these aren't the guys that he called to go kill his wife.
Man, Earl said you guys were young, but geez. Oh, well, as long as you can get the job done. What are your names?
Butthead.
Oh, I mean Beavis.
Well, that's all right. I'd rather not know your real names anyway. Mine's Muddy. Now look, I'm going to get right to the point. I'll pay you 10 grand plus expenses, all payable after you do her.
Do her?
That's right, do her. I'm offering you $10,000 plus expenses to do my wife. We got a deal?
Actually, we just want to watch TV.
Shut up, Beavis. Yeah, we'll do your wife.
No, I want to watch TV.
Damn it, Beavis, you butt munch. This guy wants us to score with his wife. And he's gonna pay us. We can buy a new TV.
Really? Cool.
We'll do it, sir.
Well, all right, then. Let's get down to business. Here she is, boys. Her name's Dallas. She ain't as sweet as she looks. She stole everything from me. You gotta watch out, because she'll do you twice as fast as you do her.
Whoa. Cool.
She's holed up in her room in Las Vegas. I got your room right next to hers. Your flight leaves in an hour. Come on. I'll drive you to the airport.
Hold up. Oh.
Can we watch some TV first?
No.
This movie has a lot of great ideas.
Like, yes.
Beavis and Butthead as mistaken hitmen. It's just like,
is very good.
It's so good.
Do you ever get, I mean, not that it's necessary, but do you get a sense where Muddy fits into this? It seems like they were criminals, right? Like They're arms dealers, and like she somehow wronged him or betrayed him or hung him out to dry and he wants to kill her.
Yes.
Is that basically
and they were married it seems like they were always, you know, fucking around on each other and generally it was not a good marriage, I don't think. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which
is why he's hiring two idiots to go kill his wife.
Gonna say he hires not a very good maybe not the best businessman.
No, and a drunk, obviously. But you know, they manage to roll their way through this mistaken identity thing because he keeps saying, I want you to do my wife. And you know what they think that means.
I love that the entire premise of this movie is just based off of that.
A bad innuendo that they don't, like, he doesn't realize he's doing and they don't understand what it actually means.
Yes.
But kind of like I was saying earlier about how they are always the butt of the joke, like in order to appreciate this show, that's kind of how you have to see them. Like that happens here, you know, like, the movie doesn't labor under this mistaken impression on the part of every character through the entire thing. Like everybody else almost immediately, like when they find her, you know, realizes they're just a couple of morons who have misunderstood this and use that to their own ends. That Beavis and Butthead are the only ones that actually are under this mistaken impression for any length of time.
And I don't think they ever get any sort of clarification that no, this is not what they intended for you. They, or if they do, they completely glide right over it. They just don't care. And so this sets us on a road trip. You know, he takes them to the airport, and they are off to Vegas to start, where they meet the old lady on the plane and nearly crash it at least once or twice.
Man, I wonder what it's like just sitting down. Like, you've got this successful property. You've gotten a movie greenlit. It's like, all right, what are we going to do? Just, like, clean sheet of paper. It's like sitting around, and you're just like...
Like, what are the bits?
Should we do a road movie?
Yeah.
Let's do a road movie. You know what I mean? Like... Let's just start pulling from the classics. It's like, all right, we're doing
should
a road
the Great
movie.
Cornholio almost crash a jetliner? Yes, let's do that.
How many times can we do Cornholio? It's a fan favorite. It's like, do we bring it up once, twice, three times?
I think you can never have too much Cornholio. I think Cornholio is money. Money Cornholio brings in the dollars
really
every
does.
Single time.
I am Cornholio!
Get the hell out of the cockpit!
You said...
Also, the part where they can get into the cockpit of a plane. Different times, huh?
Oh, very different time. Yes, yeah. We were talking pre-9/11 here. There is just a curtain and a door there. That is it.
Where the pilots are just like, get out of the cockpit!
Yep. And, you know, this, like, once they get to Vegas, they are, of course, immediately distracted from their task by a musical montage set to the Red Hot Chili Peppers cover of Love Roller Coaster by the Ohio Players. So this big wooden boat, which has a lady with boobs on it.
Yeah. Just all the bits in this are so dumb and effective.
Yeah.
This little dance thing is another one of those cases. There's like, in fact, I feel like I remember this from the trailer, that like kind of crane shot of them dancing with like what seems like some very early CG or something.
The rotation.
He said, according to Judge, this is the only computer animated part of the movie, and he called it his tribute to the dance scene in The Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, sure. Huh, the Bell and Beast dance.
Yeah. Okay, sure. That's like very contemporary.
Yeah.
It is, but I think Mike Judge likes even some of that contemporary stuff. I mean, I'm sure he also thinks it's a little saccharine, but like he seems to have a genuine appreciation for all forms of animation.
Sure.
Even though he makes this very kind of low budget, goofy stuff.
He's an artist.
That, Love Roller Coaster was far and away the breakout song from this soundtrack. That video was fucking everywhere after this movie came out.
Was that cover for the soundtrack?
Yes.
Oh, I don't think I realized that. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember that video.
I don't remember the video super well. I just remember that it aired a lot and it had clips from the movie in it. But yeah, I mean, like, there were other songs on here of note. Specifically, the Ozzy Osbourne song that shows up later is... the one that shows up in the movie is actually a demo version of this song. Which Mike Judge just liked better than the recorded version that ends up on the album. This is Walk on Water. I think that song was also kind of a hit for Ozzy Osbourne, though I don't remember ever seeing a video for it. We have White Zombie, obviously, on the soundtrack. We'll get to that part in a little bit. LL Cool J's Ain't Nobody shows up twice, both over the credits and during a love scene. You got Butthole Surfers on here. You have two ska songs on here. That is how bold this soundtrack was in 1996.
Bold.
No Doubt and Rancid.
Uh-huh.
And then we obviously have Engelbert Humperdinck's fucking cover of Lesbian Seagull.
Come with me, Lesbian Seagull. Settle down and rest with me.
Obviously.
Which is a real song, apparently.
I didn't believe it until I looked it up after.
Outside the movie?
Yes.
Huh.
Most of Mr. Van Driessen's songs on the show were apparently original, bad compositions for, you know, this hippie character. Lesbian Seagull was a song that predated the show by at least a decade or two.
Okay.
This is the thing when you're doing satire, sometimes it's hard because real life is just fucking weird.
Yep. And that rendition of Lesbian Seagull is really something. So, yeah, you know, now that they're in Vegas, they eventually find their way to the hotel and Dallas, played by Demi Moore. And to her credit, She immediately understands that these guys are fucking idiots and don't actually know what they're there to do.
Uh-huh.
Well, wanna, you know,
Do it! We're finally gonna score!
Do it.
Ow!
You guys wanna score?
Oh. Damn it! Ow! Cut out!
You wait here.
Bunghole. Damn it! Ow!
And she... So what they have stolen is this MacGuffin, this chemical weapon microchip thing. I guess they call it the X5 unit. They just let us say unit a bunch, there you go. And so she realizes she can just send them to Washington, which is where she's going to go make her deal. By getting them on a tour bus, sews the unit into Beavis's pants, which becomes a recurring bit, and promises to fuck them if they make it to Washington, which I'm sure she will not actually make good on.
Yeah, right. Her plan is she's got to get them to Washington. She's kind of, I was going to say she's hot, but she's portrayed
she's
as...
She's a smoke show. You can say it.
Yeah, well, she's just like hot in sense of she's wanted. They're on to her.
There is heat on her and the heat rating off of her.
Yeah. And so, yeah, she makes the play to be like, these idiots, nobody will suspect these idiots. Get on the bus, go.
So they put him on the bus, and this brings in Robert Stack and Greg Kinnear's agents in the beginning of the long-running bit of cavity searches. and again, Robert Stack, this is an actor who is great at saying the dumbest shit in a really deadpan way that works.
He fully commits here.
Yep.
3 days ago, you pulled a job at the Army Research Facility in Hadley, Nevada, where you stole the X-5 unit. Now, we happen to know you had the unit with you when you checked in here, so why don't you be a good girl and tell us where it is?
You gonna charge me with anything? I didn't think so. You wanna let me go now or wait till my lawyer files a wrongful arrest?
We got nothing, Chief. We tore the place apart. We can only legally hold her for another couple of hours.
Damn it. Cut her loose. Where's that damn unit?
Vernon Judge, he took a little while to warm up, did not really understand the material or what was funny about it, but after a couple of hours got really into it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, at this point, people knew Robert Stack, I think, more for Unsolved Mysteries than anything else he had done as an actor. Which is unfair because, I mean, his turn in Airplane is legendary. And I think that's kind of analogous to what he ends up doing in this role. So they're on the hunt here, and they're on the bus, and they're on this tour bus with the elderly folk, and they start hitting America's landmarks.
Yeah.
And destroying them.
Yes, as they go along. Hoover Dam is first up.
The Hoover Dam one is the ultimate example of the thing I was talking about, where you can basically destroy the Hoover Dam and just walk away from it without anybody nailing you.
Yeah, they find their way into the control room eventually, and Beavis has a real bad butt itch on account of the thing sewn into his pants, and keeps hitting a switch, and then Butthead keeps trying to change the channel in the control room because he thinks it's a TV.
Water. Yeah.
Doesn't really work, and yeah, he basically destroys the entire power grid of Las Vegas.
No biggie.
No biggie.
And poor Mr. Anderson. Washed downstream. Yeah, I don't think we really...
Yeah. No, we keep forgetting to mention Mr. Anderson. We
glossed over the first appearance of Mr. Anderson, which, like, I had forgotten how much Hank Hill is just kind of Mr. Anderson.
I mean, Hank Hill is a much more well-rounded character, because they got 9 seasons of television to do that. But Tom Anderson, you know, I think the closest analog you could draw is he is their Elmer Fudd. Sure. Or if you go further back, he is the Porky Pig to their Daffy Duck.
Yeah, he's the punching bag.
He's the punching bag, and he's a guy you don't really root for, not because he's, like, evil or horrible or anything like that. He's just lame.
Yeah.
He's just a lame old man. And they use that as the crux for, well, every horrible thing that these kids can concoct should happen to him.
You know, I tell you what, it doesn't get any better than this. This here is God's country. Unspoiled.
He's a little Mr. Furley-esque where he's always one step behind catching him. You know, like...
recognizing that it's these two kids that keep ruining his life.
Yeah, yeah. If he had just walked in a second earlier or just whatever, right, yeah.
Because, like, the ongoing bit here is that he's on a road trip also with his good lady wife. But before they can even do that, they start whacking off in his trailer, which they are taking on their road trip, and destroy the TV in there. And he's showing up all in the same places that, you know, that they are, basically. Mm-hmm. Later on, they are, as we said, after Hoover Dam, they go to Yellowstone, which is the first time where they lose their transportation and eventually get on the wrong bus because they are too distracted by the automatic flushers in the bathroom to even pay attention to the idea of Yellowstone.
I mean, those were cool at the time.
Yeah. I do really love this little montage of them cutting back and forth between actual geographical marvel and them just constantly laughing and then hitting the flushing toilet.
Mm-hmm.
So they lose the tour bus and they eventually end up with a bunch of nuns because why wouldn't they? Why not?
Yeah, I have to give it up for this. Is it a montage? I don't have the audio up here. The montage of them just going cross country on the bus. Mm-hmm. Constantly cutting to like names of towns on signs that they would find funny.
Like yes,
Bald Knob was one, right?
Bald Knob, like yeah Peck. It's very funny.
This is AC/DC. This is that AC/DC song.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry, I didn't have the audio up very high.
From here, you know, once they're on with the nuns, so they get to this bit where they go to a southwestern church, which I guess they're doing some guest service or something, and the Beavis and Butthead both think the confessional booths are a bathroom. End up taking confessional. This was apparently an unused bit that Mike Judge wanted to do in the first season of Beavis and Butthead and then just never did it.
Sure.
You know, so now you've got some cultural clout, some cachet. You can get away with this kind of blasphemy a little better.
Yep.
They stop short of having them actually, like, defecate in the booth, though.
No. They do make a guy slap himself a bunch as confession, but, you know, other than that, they don't do anything that blasphemous. That said, apparently, during the test screenings, people did not laugh at any of this until they added the part where they get struck by lightning.
That's like one of the best things in the movie, and it's such a non sequitur.
Yes.
Like, people didn't understand that they had permission to laugh at this until God punished them.
That's exactly it. I mean, that's the thing that I feel like I would never say, like, people don't get Beavis and Butthead, but it's that same thing again, though, of they are the butt of the joke. They are, right. They are who you are laughing at, not with.
Totally.
Forgive me, Father. I've sinned. I slept with a woman, and...
Really? Was she naked?
Well, yes, Father. Please forgive me.
Cool. Could you, like, see her boobs?
I'm sorry. How many Hail Marys?
1,000. And I want you to hit yourself. Right now.
Now?
Yeah. Do it.
Oh.
Yeah. Harder.
No.
Do it again.
No.
And this eventually brings us to, I think, my favorite section of the movie, because the nuns eventually abandon them, because why wouldn't they? They end up in the desert.
Oh, yeah. This is the best. Yeah.
This almost like Vision Quest kind of thing is some good stuff.
Like, you've got two distinct parts here. The first is the one where they meet the two drifters along the road. And these drifters, boy, they sure do look a lot like older Beavis and Butthead. These Motley Crue roadies who definitely went to Highland one time and definitely had sex with a couple of loose women, shall we say.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's essentially stated that these are their fathers, but it's great that the movie never lingers on that or comes out and actually says it, you know?
Or doesn't resolve it, or like right, yeah.
Or it's like, yeah, it's like, in a movie absolutely, like, chock full of great bits, like, the fact that Beavis and Butthead straight up meet their fathers is just another bit that comes and goes.
Right.
And they don't belabor it more than it needs.
Well, I think it also works because even if they did somehow make the mental connection that, oh, you're my dad, I don't think they would care.
No.
Like, even if they could do it, they would just simply go, that's cool. And then they would immediately want to hear more Motley Crue stories. So after that, you know, they ditch them in the desert. And then that eventually brings us, like you said, to this incredible drug trip sequence for Beavis after he eats the wrong cactus, thinking there's water in there.
Hey, buddy, I'm starting to feel weird. I think I'm freaking out.
Okay.
Well, this is cool. It's like everything looks all weird and... there's all these weird shapes and it's sort of like... It's like a music video.
What is that art style? It's not like quite Ed Roth. Like, it's... You know, it's...
Well, it's Rob Zombie is what it is.
It's Rob Zombie. Okay.
So it's not specifically Rob Zombie. He did not animate this, though it is based very heavily on the art of Rob Zombie.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Of course. Like that the Hot Rod.
Yes.
Which album is that? The famous album cover? Like, yes. That immediately came to mind as soon as you said that.
Yeah. And so the animation for this bit was done by Chris Pronosky, who was an animator on the show at the time. He went on to eventually do animation for Daria as well, and then he founded Titmouse Studios, which went on to do Metalocalypse, and is the animation studio that did the most recent reboot of Beavis and Butthead.
Oh.
Okay. Good for him.
Right. Yeah. But it is, again, it is based off the drawings of Rob Zombie and animating them into, you know, this kind of, like, heavy metal magazine presentation.
Yeah.
And it fucking rules.
It's really cool.
Like, just great psychedelic imagery. It's a good White Zombie song they use for it. And it doesn't, like, as Mike Judge puts it, it doesn't really belong in the movie, but it doesn't matter.
No, but when you step back and look at all the other things that don't belong here, it's just another in this cavalcade of amazing sequences. You know, there's, like, the kaiju attack at the beginning, the cop show intro, like, this. Like, there's just so much in this.
And this bit is also preceded by the bit where they're having their life flash before their eyes. And all Butthead remembers is them sitting on the couch together over the years, and Beavis remembers being a sperm.
Yes, I do like that whole thing.
Sperm Beavis.
Like the Butthead with the big braces thing wrapped around his
face. Yeah, the headgear. Like, yeah. While this is all going on, the investigation continues, and that's where you get the raid on the high school where they beat the shit out of Andreessen for just a laugh of watching a hippie just get his fucking ass kicked by ATF agents, I guess.
That's him! He's their teacher!
What's going on here?
I'll ask the questions. Are these your students?
I assume you're a government agent. I would think you would know there's something in this country called due process, okay?
That's about the kind of talk I'd expect from the guy who taught these two. Take this scum away.
I believe I'm supposed to be read my Miranda rights. Now, if
I always knew they were no good. I hate them.
Shut up. You've been harboring two criminal masterminds.
I do always enjoy Van Dreessen tries to assert himself. It never goes well.
Is that a bit from the show? Again, I don't remember much of the high school stuff at all.
Whenever he tries to, like, take it to the man, it never goes well for him, is generally the bit. So the next leg of their journey after they have their drug trip, this is maybe the most contrived thing in the movie, is that Muddy just finds them on the side of the road.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of enormously convenient coincidences in this, but
it's kind of the nature of the show. The way things just come together for them is always complete happenstance and the dumbest happenstance imaginable. But in this case, Buddy, you know, splashes some water on him, shoves him in the trunk, and they accidentally reveal that they're going to Washington, and he's like, oh, that's where she's going. Which brings us to our probably the most action-packed scene in the movie, the stuff on the highway.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of animation.
Yeah.
I mean, after they get out of the car, but yeah.
They are, well, I mean, even when they're in, you know, just on in the car, in the trunk, and it is moving, there's just a lot happening in this. And then Butthead has the great idea. It's like, no, just start running. You'll make it.
This is where, again, I think it's the stuff in the desert, but then this is really where I'm like, you know, Butthead's just an asshole.
Yeah.
Beavis could have a life outside of Butthead.
And he never will.
Yeah. He's just a monster.
Yeah. Because they are just spiritual life partners and they will never be free of one another.
Yeah.
There is, okay, one thing I will give, especially the newer episodes, like the most recent reboot and the one before, is that they have really gone a lot deeper into the interiority of Beavis.
Oh, okay.
Beavis is like a sympathetic
character.
Yeah. They have kind of gotten into the notion of there is more going on with Beavis than maybe we realize, though he is forever, again, enthralled to Butthead, so that will never change. But he gets some bits where he gets to kind of, you know, exert some agency, shall we say.
Okay.
Not here, though. He gets thrown into traffic and causes a 75-car pileup.
Yes, along with Butthead.
Yeah. Similar to the Hoover Dam thing, it is an all-time disaster, and they just walk away from it. But they do find the tour bus again.
Yeah.
And they're on their way to Washington. And then once you're in Washington, it's just kind of, that's the rest of the movie.
They wind up, like, in the background of some news report, right? That's when the government sees them.
Yeah, Robert Sachs all jumping, Jesus, Jehoshaphat, or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like the only possible conclusion for the the criminals is for them to end up back together.
Mm-hmm.
Like they seem like the kind of couple that are constantly trying to kill each other and screw each other over, but never actually like going through with it.
Yeah, and you know, in this case, they, you know, she puts on the charm, they start doing it in the car, and then they get arrested, and she immediately turns on him.
Yeah.
Well, look what we have here. You two make me sick. Book 'em, Bork.
You don't have anything on us, and you know it.
Oh, I don't, huh? How about lewd conduct? Maybe indecent exposure? Here's what's gonna happen. One of you's gonna make a deal and get me the unit. The other can spend the next 60 years in jail.
That's where you're wrong, boy. Me and my wife are back together, and you will never...
He stole the unit. Said he put it in some kid's pants.
Why, you damn little four-legged... Hey, take it easy!
And while this is going on, they are on their tour of various Washington landmarks, and Beavis has gotten a whole lot of... Well, let's see. They haven't gotten to Cornholio again yet, but they do get to talk into the microphone,
yeah.
The Senate page microphone, and start saying stuff to the United States Senate.
Attention. Attention. We're looking for the chick with big boobs.
Yeah, we are ready to do you now.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite bits in this is all of the... Just the Congress people in here laughing like,
mm-hmm.
holds up
as if to say our elected leaders are no better than Beavis and Butthead.
It holds up.
Is Mike
up.
Judge a sage?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe not, but to say that kind of holds up.
And we talk about the pathos of Beavis. I mean, this next bit when they're getting back on the thing, getting ready to go to their last stop at the White House and realizing their tour's almost over, Beavis realizes they haven't scored yet.
Yeah. So it's a pretty good bit. Or it's a good,
they never
it's
found
good
that
speech.
Chick.
It's a good speech.
Hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Why are we getting back on the bus?
It's time to go, son.
We can't leave. We never met that chick. Damn it. We were supposed to get some.
Settle down, Beavis.
No, I won't settle down. Not this time. Damn it, this always happens. I think I'm gonna score, and then I never score. It's not fair. We've traveled 100 miles because we thought we were gonna score. But now it's not gonna happen. Damn it.
Hey, buddy, sit down.
Shut up, asswipe. I'm sick and tired of this. We're never gonna score. It's just not gonna happen. We're just gonna get old like these people. But they've probably scored.
Hey, I'm more than you. Sit down.
It's like this chick's a slut. And look at this guy. He's old, but he's probably scored a million times.
Oh, yeah.
But not us. We're never gonna score. We're never gonna score. We're never gonna
All
score.
All right, that's it, numbnuts.
What's more of a punk? Kick your ass.
It's like, again, I feel like it sums up. It's almost a fourth wall breaking moment, but not quite. Where he's just like, what has this all been? What have we been doing this whole time?
Yeah.
If not to score, why are we even here? I should be watching TV somewhere.
The swell of music that comes up behind him and just sort of the tone of this thing has a real, like, Jimmy Stewart big speech quality.
Yeah,
sure.
Oh, I've never got a score. Oh, what are we even doing here?
Yeah, right.
This old guy's probably scored a million times, and he's old as shit.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then that is when Richard Linklater kicks his ass, and then he gets the no-dose pills. Let me tell you, that no-dose shit is no joke. I know from experience, as someone who used to tour a lot along the West Coast and did a lot of night drives, I have taken no-dose, otherwise known as over-the-counter trucker speed.
Yeah.
A couple of those will definitely put you on a path, let me tell you.
Is it more than just caffeine? I always thought they were just caffeine pills, but maybe there's something more serious.
I think it's similar. There's something else in it that is not just caffeine, but whatever it is. I mean, it's again, you can
it's
get it over
like
the counter.
It's straight amphetamines, right?
It's not amphetamines. Okay. I can tell you that. Or if it is, it is an extremely light dose of it. But
also, I wonder if whatever it is or was less controlled then than it is now.
Mm. I would think so. The one time I took too many of them. Was an overnight trip where we were about to play a festival show the next day in Irvine, California. And we played the show, and I was so fucking wired, and absolutely nobody was coming to our merch booth after we played, because we were not very good. Me and another guy who was also on too many of those things stood up on our merch table and started carnival barking at all these ska fans that kept walking past our table and screaming at them to come and check out our merch. And it was the name of the show was Ska Against Racism, and we started calling the other bands next to us racist. You don't want to buy a show of merch from them. They're racists.
Wow.
We were out of our fucking minds. Yes. We sold more t-shirts on that show than we sold any other show on that tour.
There you go.
So there you go.
There you go.
Trucker speed, kids. You'll sell lots of merch.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's just my way of filling time here, because there's not a lot else to say. You know, they kind of worm their way into the White House, and this is where it all kind of comes unfurled.
Yeah. Probably my favorite Anderson moment in this movie, where he's just standing here in front of this portrait of Eisenhower. He's going, where are you when we need you, Ike?
It's probably the most perfect president for him to idolize.
Yes.
Because I believe his character, he says he's a veteran of two foreign wars.
Two foreign wars. Such an amazing
one of
label.
Those is Korea. I forget what the other one is, but so in the more recent episodes, they do these little interstitial bits where they do, like, it's Tom Anderson war stories, but every one of them is him just working behind the scenes, like, you know, like working in the garage at a military base and being like, well, you know what you need to do there is you need to, you got a broken gasket, so we got to do, and like, like bombs are exploding around them, like horrible things are happening to everyone but him, and he is completely oblivious to all of it because he's the most boring human alive.
He could stay at this Capitol forever.
Yeah, but they won't let him because, you know, there's a terror threat happening, and that terror threat is Beavis and Butthead and Cornholio.
Yeah, it's mostly Beavis at this point.
It's mostly Beavis. They get separated here because Beavis is in full Cornholio mode, and the tour guide's like, you should go.
And Pierre L'Enfant.
For my bunghole. Bunghole.
Sir? Sir, are you okay?
Are you threatening me? I am Cornholio.
Okay. Sir, maybe you should wait out in the lobby.
Okay. In this lobby. Will there be teepee for my bunghole?
The room was originally designed...
I mean, A, it's another one of those pre-9/11 things, but also B, even at this time, there's no way they would have ever quite allowed this to go down like this, but the idea that all these world leaders and dignitaries are just mingling with a tour group.
Yes.
Like, just walking around with no security.
There are some liberties taken here, you know. I don't think this particular portrait of Richard Nixon would be in the White House.
With the hands up.
I don't think you would be able to just walk into Chelsea Clinton's room at any point and just say, hey, baby.
I thought when I'm watching this again, this would have gone against everything we've just said about Beavis and Butthead. I didn't remember what happened. I thought maybe he was actually going to score with Chelsea Clinton.
No, she's just going to beat the shit out of him.
And throw him out a window, yeah.
Yeah. The Chelsea Clinton bit is good. Apparently there was an alternate bit with that scene where they would have had her packing her bags because they weren't sure if Dole was going to win the presidency in 96. Mm. And then they changed it when they realized, yeah, there's probably not much chance of that happening. But yeah, I mean, this is just them doing dumb shit in the White House. At one point, they call NORAD. The red phone, yeah, in the Oval Office. The Andersons get kicked out along with the foreign dignitaries who are very interested in what Cornholio has to say.
I mean, who wouldn't be?
Yeah. And Cornholio finds the trailer again.
This country's going to hell in a handbasket. I'm going to go over right now and talk to my congressman about this. What the hell? Wait here a minute. What in the hell is that damn noise? What?
Hey, how's it going?
Pull your damn pants up, boy! Ow. I don't want to see that! Damn it! Get out of here! And if I ever catch you whacking in here again, I'm going to hog-tie you. Ah, damn it! Now I got to straighten up in
whacking
here.
Whacking off from my trailer. Whacking it.
Cha-cha, cha-cha.
off in whose...
Trailer. Whomst is whacking. I never really... got that deep into grammar, which is probably not a great thing to say as a professional writer, but so I don't really know, like, ending a sentence with a preposition. I don't really know why that's bad.
Oh, you're not, well, you're not supposed to do it in formal.
Okay.
Formal grammar or whatever. It's looked down upon, but absolutely nobody cares. Which is why it's a good ongoing bit of like damn it, so-and-so, no self-respecting federal agent would ever end a sentence with a preposition.
My wife will sometimes twist into a sentence that's like, you gotta let that one go.
Just let it go.
Just let it go.
No one here is judging your grammar.
Yeah.
I can't make the off fit. Like, in whose trailer they are whacking, sure.
Yeah.
But right. I can't figure out, I could not work it out while watching this.
Like, you probably do whacking it. You can't say whacking off. That just sounds weird. And
off in whose trailer, though, I guess?
Yeah, there you go. This brings us to the final standoff here, which is, you know, they think Cornholio is going to explode this device. There is a tense standoff. And then Anderson has the pants.
Yeah. Well, right, because Cornholio or Beavis has taken them off to do the whacking.
Yes. He's still got his underwear on, thankfully.
Yeah. And Anderson's in the trailer at this point, right? When he comes out in his underwear, he kicks him out in his underwear.
Now I got to straighten up.
Yeah. He's like really not that put off, but he's more just
oh,
like, come
damn it.
On.
What are you doing? I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
And when he comes out, they tackle him, the pants go flying, they land in Butthead's hand.
The device
the
does.
Unit, the device does, yeah. And everyone's like,
there you go.
It's over!
And they go from terrorists to heroes.
Our long national nightmare is over.
Well, was it Anderson? Is that it? Anderson's the real terrorist.
Oh, yeah.
How'd you conscript these kids to do your dirty work?
Yeah, they really settle on this idea that Tom Anderson is actually a criminal mastermind that set these kids on this path. And then they get to meet Bill Clinton.
For security reasons, your actions will have to remain top secret.
Yeah.
But someone very special wants to give his thanks.
Beavis and Butthead, on behalf of your fellow Americans, I extend my deepest thanks. You exemplify a fine new crop of young Americans who will grow into the leaders of this great country.
He said extend.
In recognition for your great service, I'm appointing you honorary agents in the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
Whoa. Alcohol and tobacco?
Yeah. And firearms.
Cool, huh?
Cigarettes and beer kick ass.
Yeah, yeah. We're in the Bureau of Beer and Fire and Cigarettes. And maybe some chicks, too.
This is gonna be cool.
Again, actually.
Yeah. Oh, wait,
because Bill Clinton is in the show.
Oh, okay. Huh.
They do a whole episode where Bill Clinton comes to Highland High. And they're going to have a bunch of, you know, the good kids and ask questions as part of, like, the Rock the Vote campaign.
Mm.
Tap of the Sword is there and everything. and then they sneak their way in, and then Bill Clinton decides they're pretty cool.
Just goes to show the one exception to the rule. Beavis and Butthead only win when that is required to reset everything to the status quo.
Yes. And they also still don't really know they've won. Because they don't care who Bill Clinton is.
Right. They're not actually going to benefit from their good fortune.
No,
they're
not
idiots.
At all. And, you know, I mean, look, if you weren't alive during the Clinton years, you may not remember that the prevailing parody of Bill Clinton was basically a goofy chuckle fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just yeah. Like, basically a Beavis and Butthead-like.
Yes, kind of, yeah. Also, but having him pop up in this was just like a real record scratch moment of like, oh, wow. Does one look at Bill Clinton very differently now than then?
Yes. And, you know, I mean, look, it's the Clinton years were an interesting time for America, and this is pretty smack dab in the middle of it. But they eventually find their way back to Highland. You know, they don't really care that the president said they were cool, but they do care that they have found their lost television.
And their exact television, a little worse for the wear, maybe, but they find it.
I mean, it's pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
But they don't care, because they have TV now.
Butthead! Butthead, look!
Yes!
Yes! Yes! Yes! Oh! Oh!
Yes!
Oh, yes!
Hey, Butthead. Do you think we're ever gonna score?
I probably will, but not you. You're too much of a butt monkey.
Shut up, dill hole.
Butt dumpling.
Turd burglar.
Ass goblin.
Shut up, Butthead.
Hey, doesn't Tom Anderson live on the street?
Yeah.
I just need to stop by his tool shed for a couple minutes. You know what I'm saying?
I really like this bit of them walking off into the sunset, though.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah. And that's Beavis and Butthead Do America. You know, I think Brad, I think you were the one who said it. This is kind of the best case scenario for something like this finding its way to the big screen.
It's hard to imagine a better movie based on this show.
Yeah. Like, the other movie is not as quite as good as this. And I think it's just because there's so many years between it and it's not quite as novel.
Mm.
But it's still good. And I think that the really surprising thing to me is that Beavis and Butthead has endured over the ensuing decades and continues to hold up by and large.
I really want to watch that movie now. A, kind of because I want to see some more Beavis and Butthead, but B, just to see what you do to make that thing continue to be relevant after how 30 years.
And the way they do it mostly is by acknowledging that they can't just watch music videos all the time anymore because those barely exist anymore outside of YouTube. They do, in fact, in the most recent seasons, just start watching YouTube videos in addition to the other shit. And they also add some slight differences. In the movie, Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe is literally a universe-fracturing movie. Like, they go into space, and they fuck up the universe, and they end up in alternate timelines and stuff. So there is both an older Beavis and Butthead who become regulars on the new season of television. They do whole episodes around middle-aged Beavis and Butthead living together and still being just complete fucking losers.
Huh.
And there is also the alien smart Beavis and Butthead.
Huh?
Who look like the Watchers from Marvel. But the thing is, they're still dumb, but they're dumb compared to all the other smart people of their extremely advanced human race.
They're so relatively dumb.
So, like, they know how to use some big words, but they still use them incorrectly and are just, like, just smart enough to fuck with science, but also do it badly.
Sorry, where do all those shorts or those concepts appear?
I believe they're all on Paramount Plus.
Those are just in the new seasons, is what you're saying?
They're all in the new seasons, and I think those characters also appear in the most recent movie as well.
Okay, interesting. I mean, it sounds like they didn't shift the entire show in this direction, but that's like the thing that animation never does, long-running animation like The Simpsons or whatever, is like actually skip forward in time, like actually have the characters grow and age.
Yeah, here it's more of like alternate timeline where like...
Sounds like it's just a gag here, right?
Because at some point, I think, if I remember correctly, our Beavis and Butthead just end up in 2021 or 2 or whenever it was that movie came out, and they're just like there now.
Oh, I was going to ask you, how do they modernize it without them getting older? So that's how they do it.
But then also, like, in the newer episodes, it's still McVicker. It's still all the same teachers. None of them have really aged or anything. It's just... Look, man, it doesn't matter. It's a cartoon. But, that's really it.
But they have smartphones and YouTube.
They exist, yeah. Those things exist. I think that's kind of our touch here on Beavis and Butthead. We're probably not going to do a full series rewatch anytime soon. Vinny?
Yeah?
Where's this one rank?
Oh, geez. Great question, Alex. Where would Beavis and Butthead the movie rank in our fine... what number are we getting up to? We're getting close to 100.
This is episode 87. Some of those are TV episodes, but I'm going to say we're probably at least over 50 movies at this point.
You know, it's not going to be too high on my list, just because, again, we've got a lot of stuff on here.
We got some bangers on here, to be
fair. Yeah. And while I like Beavis and Butthead, I think the movie is... a good complement to the show, let's say.
Yes.
It
is not an amazing standalone film, though it did get 2 thumbs up from Ebert and Siskel. So.
Yeah, 3 fantastic. Stars from Roger Ebert.
Yep.
All right, let's see. Because it makes the most sense to me. Does it go above Wild at Heart or below Wild at Heart? Well, it's got Wild at Heart energy, you know?
Yes, Sailor Ripley is a Beavis and Butthead. He would at least enjoy it, I think.
Yeah, so and I think it's going to go right below Wild at Heart for me because I feel
it
like
it has
it's
to.
Got-
you know why? Because Sailor has scored. Beavis and Butthead have never scored.
He's one step higher.
Yeah.
So yeah, it goes above Wild at Heart.
Or below.
Oh, sorry, below Wild at Heart and above Righting Wrongs. That's where
sure.
That's. That's where it goes.
I believe you. I believe in this for you.
Okay, good. Yeah, that means it's above trespass, which I guess it should be.
Sure.
But below, below Dune, which is okay with me.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what to, I don't know how to, again, I've stopped arguing with these. There's no point to it. It's your list and I respect it.
It's an amazing list.
Very accurate.
It's canonical.
All right. Well, speaking of canon and speaking of our current theme, our next movie is a movie that just walks in and just trounces all over the canon of the thing it's based on. The 1987 adaptation of Dragnet.
Never seen the original Dragnet. I have no idea what really to expect. Well, except for what you've said about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you will know what the Dragnet thing is almost immediately once you start watching this movie.
And you do not know the cast yet, right?
I don't. I mean, I know Joe Friday. I know the name Joe Friday. That's
okay, but you don't know the actors involved in it?
Cultural osmosis.
No, I'm going to make sure we don't spoil it for you.
I'm not going to.
Don't say anything. For some reason, Tom Hanks is associated in my head with it, but that I don't know if that's actually accurate or not, so don't tell me.
Enjoy your surprise is all I will say.
Okay. Is this a movie for dads?
No.
Did you say
no?
No.
No, it isn't.
I mean, there's a lot of like...
It's a movie for dads of our age because it was a movie that was targeted at the kids of people who watched original Dragnet.
Oh, okay. I guess I was asking if it's a movie for our dads.
No.
No, you didn't know?
No.
Okay.
You know why?
Why?
Because I'm pretty sure anyone who actually liked original Dragnet thought this movie was a nightmare.
I don't know. I'm not 100% on board with Al. It's a little like... Like it's a little Naked Gun-ish. It's okay. a little right. Airplane-ish.
That's exactly what I'm expecting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's fine. And here's the thing. It's not that I think Dragnet is a great movie. It's not. But I enjoy it as someone who watched it a bunch as a kid. But I also have seen a bunch of Dragnet, at least the 1967 series. And let me tell you, it is the driest, most cop-loving cop show you have ever seen in your entire life. There is not, if comedy is wetness, this is the desert. It is the most flat affect delivery of cop procedural you could ever imagine. And this movie is extremely not that.
No.
All right.
I did put a couple episodes of Dragnet 67 on the drive if you are looking to just at least get a taste of what that show was like. There's a long history with Jack Webb and the whole Dragnet thing, and then they come in and make this movie and make a mockery of the whole thing.
I like Dragnet. I remember
I'm not here
Dragnet.
To defend original Dragnet or this movie or anything. I'm just saying it's very different.
I remember Dragnet fondly. I don't know if it will hold up. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm not going to make any promises about it holding up, but I think we will at least have a fun time talking about it. That is our movie for next week, so look forward to that. As always, thank you, Brad. Thank you, Vinny.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone who has been listening and watching along at home with us. We'll see you next time. this is... the next Lander podcast. Okay, I'm not going to do that. That was bad. I'm going to cut that.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
What the hell are you guys doing over there?
I'm going to start.
No, not the whole podcast?
No.
Okay.
All right.